and welcome to the latest episode of the FT Advisor in Focus podcast, where we will be discussing green home improvements and whether they are worth investing in. From home insulation, new windows and heat pumps, to solar panels on the roof, green home improvements can save money on energy bills in a short and long run, but they are often expensive to install. Are these investments nevertheless worth it? With me here to discuss this today are Daryl Duffer, mortgage advisor at The Mortgage Expert, Justin Moy, mortgage advisor at Essex Home Finance, property development consultant Joe Garner, and Andreas Torsheim, CEO and founder of European solar marketplace Otovo. Welcome all. Thanks for being here today.
Morning.
Joe, before we look at the pros and cons of adapting a home, can you talk us through some of the most common and effective options kind of available to green up your home, and what are the approximate costs?
Of course. So in terms of the most common, I would say that double glazing, new double glazing, is still the most common. You'd be looking at a cost of maybe £500 to £750 a window, which would be a decent double glazed UPVC window. So for the everyday home, the average person, the benefits not only are for green energy and energy saving, but obviously in terms of airflow into a building and, you know, dealing with mold and things like that, there's a bit of a two-pronged attack from the double glazing. So following on from that, boiler upgrades are quite popular. However, there is still some issues with how the boiler upgrades work with energy rating and that sort of thing. And then solar panels, obviously, and we have an expert here to talk through solar panels, but solar panels have come a huge way from when they were first installed. You know, you have some fantastic products now, such as solar roof tiles. There's a company called Marley who produce a lot of roof tiles. They have a solar roof tile. So I would say in terms of energy upgrades and green additions to the average home, the double glazed windows and solar panels are the most common.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Andreas, you are the expert on solar options. What are the options there, and how does generating solar energy actually work in the UK? Is it a case of, you know, you put those panels on your roof and off you go? You can use your own electricity, or how does it work?
Yes, it's really as simple as you made it out. The solar panels go on the roof. There's a wire that goes down through a smart part that's called the inverter, and then the power flows from there into your electrical cabinet. And energy you make yourself, that's just deducted from your energy bill. That's electricity you don't have to buy from the overall grid. And if you haven't updated your view on solar in the last 5 or 10 years, you should really check it out, because these panels have become very, very performant. I got my first solar panel 7 years ago, and I got another set now as I moved houses, and they're twice as powerful, and they're about a third of the price. So these technologies work, and they work even up here in the north of Scandinavia where I live, and obviously they work on the British Isles and everywhere else. So this is the technology that's been getting better, and if you didn't get solar panels last year, you probably made the right choice, because this year has been an exceptional price drop in solar panels, and people who are getting solar panels this autumn are looking quite smart. So fantastic development there. And I think that's one of the most exciting things about this energy transition, is that it's one of the devices that go into our home that's really getting better and cheaper every day. And I think it's encouraging in thinking that, you know, 10 years from now, we'll probably all have heat pumps, solar panels, batteries, and electric vehicles. We won't get them all at once, but the technology is coming to our encounter, and it's getting better for us. So that's good.
Mm-hmm. Just to clarify, though, the solar panels that most people commonly install are not used for heat generation. They're just electricity, right?
Yes, they make electricity, and that's the same panel that goes into a solar field in Egypt or on a barn in the Midwest of the US. So everyone's kind of using the same panel technology. It's the panels that make electricity that are really dropping in price. So that's the technology that's been gaining traction over the last few years. And solar power on homes last year would be that's been installed on rooftops in Europe last year would be equivalent to several nuclear reactors. So homeowners across Europe are building out an infrastructure that is clawing its way into electricity markets and helping lowering bills for both those who get them and the neighbors next door who have more energy from the traditional sources for themselves, and that way helps lower demand and lower prices for everyone.
And what is the typical price in the UK of installing enough of those panels to be able to generate the electricity needed by a typical household?
Well, the good thing is you can size it a bit as you want. You can put 6 panels up on your roof. That's a small system and could fit on a garage or a small roof. Or you could just size it up to fill a whole barn or a whole field, right? So it really depends on the size. The systems start maybe at about 4,000 pounds, and you can size it up from there. And usually people take enough panels to cover about 40 to 70% of their energy needs in the home.
Okay. Well, let's talk to the advisors, who I know are a little bit more skeptical about the costs versus benefits of these upgrades. Daryl, under what circumstances might the benefits of what we just heard outweigh the cost?
I think it's certainly on the type of, the individual, the house in question. I think it's important, very much so. I think if we are looking to get to any type of net zero arena for all of us, then we need to think very carefully about, our energy consumption. Making things greener is definitely something that I feel strongly about, but I think there are some barriers, certainly from my perspective, when it comes to lenders and how they perceive the sort of green agenda. Most lenders are certainly embracing, having some level of sort of, changes to properties, and obviously greener mortgages are available. But at the same time, there are issues surrounding, for example, like solar panels. Most lenders prefer them to be owned by the occupier as opposed to be leased. I think some of the earlier edition sort of solar panels, there were many companies out there that were offering them as a lease. Now, lots of lenders out there don't like that at all, because obviously it's all about ownership. And for these guys, it's about resale of a property. So who's looking after these, these panels, for example? So it's kind of I've rambled on a little bit, but certainly I think it's very important. I think, we all need to play our part. Certainly us as advisors, we are advising clients, to make any upgrades that they can. But I think largely it boils down to cost. And I think that's really the key issue here for consumers out there is, how they go about it, how do they fund it, what funding is available, and it seems to be not uniform across the whole country, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, so I was getting ready to comment on the cost side, because solar is a resource. It's a natural resource, and unfortunately, it's not fairly distributed. So obviously, if you live in the south, your panels will create more power for your home than if you live in the north. If you live down at the bottom of a valley where the sun doesn't shine as much as on a nice coastal town, then you're a bit in an unfortunate situation that at the end of the day the panel costs the same, but the solar output is going to be different. So the sunnier the place in general, the more affordable the solar power, and in general also the more populous your region, the cheaper, because the workmen can get the more good density of work, they can be more efficient. So we see these differences across Europe. We also see them translate into the different geographies in England. So if you're in a sparsely populated northern county, then it's of course more difficult than if you're in a busy southern town.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, well, Justin, what do you hear from your clients? Are a lot of people interested in green home improvements?
I think the interest is there definitely, and as Daryl said, I think when you talk to any of our customers, it is a primary consideration. I think this is almost just a little bit of bad timing, given the way that certainly the mortgage market's moved in the last 12, 18 months, you know, we don't need to go on about interest rates doubling, trebling. And I think that there are two things. One, it's what people want, but can they afford it? And even if there is a government grant or some form of finance from lenders to actually pay for these things, the reality is it's a priority. And is it a priority at the moment? Or is it something that we can put off for a couple of years whilst interest rates are high, whilst people are actually still trying to kind of work out whether they can still actually just keep the house that they've got at the moment, however inefficient it may be from an energy perspective? I think it's one of those things that I think certainly for the majority of my clients, they probably will kind of kick it down the road for perhaps 2 or 3 years' time when interest rates are perhaps a bit cheaper. It means that these things can become a little bit more affordable. But I think it would be wrong for most families, certainly, my type of client, who would say, look, you know, if an upgrade to a property to make it greener is going to cost me £3,000-£4,000 on top of a grant, is that £3,000-£4,000 actually better off just covering that extra cost of my mortgage for the minute, knowing that perhaps in 2 or 3 years' time, I could get to that. You know, I will probably need a new boiler in 3 or 4 years' time. So is that the time I need to do it, rather than trying to do it quickly and early, when actually the financial incentive isn't there to do it? Be it either a cost per month budgeting type constraint, or when you look at the incentives that the lenders are putting together at the moment, the incentives are so small. You know, I've done some quick numbers here, and just on a typical mortgage with one of the high street lenders, the difference between a green mortgage and a normal mortgage on a £300,000 property, couple hundred thousand pound mortgage, is about £110 a year. Mm. So an incentive of just over £100 a year to go and spend thousands on an upgrade to a house doesn't work in today's society, but it might do when figures are better, rates are cheaper. And that then may be where we start to see some of that change. But in the short term, I think it's, for most people, it's probably going to be well outside the reach.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I mean, does there come a point, I suppose on paper, it would make more sense for people who stay in their homes for longer. But what's the kind of, you know, when does it actually, how long should you stay in your home for it to make sense?
I think as a nation, we have probably one of the highest turnovers of people wanting to move. I appreciate in other parts of Europe, people live in their houses for 20, 30, 40 years. It's a family thing. In the UK, the number of people that kind of move and then perhaps 2 or 3 years' time move again and move again and move again. All this is going to do eventually is just make properties more attractive for people to buy. In the current market, it might be the difference between, you know, perhaps obtaining the price you want versus perhaps a down valuation. If your house is efficient, that looks a bit better, that feels a bit better. It's a bit like when you put a brand new kitchen in your home. Assuming you haven't made the kitchen room larger, but you've just changed the cabinets and you've made it look good and you made it look impressive, it doesn't really add value to the property. It probably just stops someone discounting that price a little bit more. If it's what they're looking for and it's good and it's an attractive kitchen, the number of people who say, I've spent £20,000 on a kitchen, I think my house has gone up by £20,000. Well, probably no, it hasn't, but it could be that you've actually tactically got a better price against someone else who hasn't done their kitchen. And I think we're falling into this as the work gets done, that if you've got heat pumps and you've got solar panels, that'll look a bit more attractive over another property in the same street, which is similar, but doesn't have those facilities.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, just on that point, I think in this situation, we're talking carrot and we're talking stick, and I don't think carrot works. You could walk down your street today, knock on every door and ask to see their boiler. I guarantee you will find 30-year-old boilers, 20-year-old boilers. You'll find boilers that haven't been maintained properly, that people just get on with, they just get by with, drains that are still blocked, they have to unblock them every year. You know, people have still got lead water pipes in their house. You'll be surprised how resilient people are in their own homes and how they're willing to live. So I don't think the carrot approach works, and it's certainly not a big enough carrot at the moment to warrant investing in changes to your home. The other concern I have is if we allow DIY green improvements. They won't be done very well, unfortunately. There are some brilliant DIY people, and I'm not disrespecting anybody, but the level that you need to install to make this work and have add value to your property needs to be done professionally. And where you will have professional solar installers and that sort of thing, anything like insulation or those sorts of changes, you know, if you don't do them properly, they decrease the value in your property. So you look at then the mass house builders, and so you've got the large guys who you'll see in the news all the time talking about share prices when things change, and then you'll have the SME house builders. Now, anything that goes into building regulations has to be done. So, for example, post-Grenfell, horrendous event that happened with Grenfell, try and take some sort of silver linings, positives. There's been big changes to how we deal with fire within buildings. So there's been added fire suppression like sprinklers. There's now double staircases for certain buildings over certain heights. We need that kind of approach. So, but what you can't do is put that all on the house builders without any incentives. Because at the moment, house builders, if the price of construction goes up, the house builder suffers. If the cost of the land goes up, the house builder suffers. If the price of the finished units go down, house builder suffers. Even the money you borrow as a house builder is variable on the interest rate. So to make a major change, I think what we need to do is bring these things into building regulations. Mm-hmm. At the moment, obviously in the news, you have the gas boiler change that's been flip-flopped around. It's a criminal event that's occurred there, in terms of you can't introduce a policy, let everybody prepare for it, let everybody change their working process. Landlords have literally sold properties because they don't have the funds to make those changes, and now it's changed again. Mm-hmm. So there has to be clarity on the situation. But at this point in time, if you put an electric boiler, brand new electric combi boiler, into a property, you reduce the energy rating, it goes down, it gets worse than having an old gas boiler. That's where we are at this point in time
with EPC rating.
Because there's no guarantee of where, or there's no, I'm not an expert on this, we'll have to check it, but it's something to do with where the power comes from to the electric boiler. There's no guarantee on the electricity and how it's produced. Mm-hmm. So whilst you've just put a brand new boiler in, you've reduced the need to have flues on the outside of buildings, you've reduced your carbon monoxide risks, you've reduced the need to have a gas safe engineer check it every year, it's infinitely a better product. But it takes the energy rating down. So there's no clarity, there's no incentive to install these kind of products. So I think that what we need to do is have a major change in the fixed standards, the absolute guaranteed standards, minimum standards. And we need to use the stick approach. If you want to build brand new houses, you have to get them to this standard. Mm-hmm. But you have to make sure that we don't punish the house builders, particularly the SME house builders, and we make sure that it's incentivized in a way that it's profit driven, because that's how we will make major change. Mm-hmm. And that's how you get innovation in tech and innovation in any other industry. You have to incentivize and encourage people.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, what's currently happening seems to be almost the opposite, in that we had stricter regulations were meant to come in for landlords on EPC ratings. They're now delayed. What do we actually need from the government in terms of what they offer, the incentives that you've mentioned already, but in terms of, for people to make home improvements, what kind of funding mechanisms? There isn't much around. There are a few schemes for the lowest earners, I believe, and there is the Green Deal Finance, which is a funding arrangement which seems to make sense. I think the way it works is that it comes out of your energy bill, so the amount you save from the improvements is basically the amount you would, in practice, pay back, but obviously for a longer period of time if the rates are higher. What could the government kind of introduce?
Can I just jump in?
Yes.
Not so much the introduction. I think they need to do a bit of an overhaul, really, on their website, certainly when it comes to the EPC rating of existing properties. I use mine as an example of a house. It's a four-bedroom house, 1960s property. It's currently at a D rating, which was undertaken probably about 6 years ago. I've made no additional upgrades to the property's existing double glazing. The boiler, I think, is about 3 years old. But just with the suggested, because obviously when you go onto the EPC rating, it gives you the performance grade. It gives you typical upgrades that could be achieved. And I thought, well, okay, so let's look at the insulation. Let's look at maybe changing the boiler, maybe some additional draft proofing, some double glazing, introduction of obviously the heat pumps and solar panels. The average cost, typified by the government website, was about £21,000. And it gave me a figure, I can't think exactly what it was, but it would, on a yearly basis, it would take over 34 years to make to get that money back.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if there's any changes that need to be done, I think they need to have a bit of a realistic overhaul of, you know, an outdated EPC performance rating system that they've got. Because it is scaremongering clients out there, and perhaps get some dedicated providers on there that will give some, you know, efficient costings and true analysis. Because I don't think it's where it needs to be really at the moment.
Okay. What do you think, Justin?
Well, I go with that, and as I said, this is all about incentive versus benefit. Everyone wants the benefit because they can see what's coming. You only got to look at the number of electric cars being purchased at the moment. You know, that Tesla's what, first, second every month when it comes to cars being sold. So I think everyone is kind of on the electric or on the efficiency kind of bandwagon, but you can't have this situation where the government is expecting you to pay out tens of thousands of pounds, even with a grant, to save a fraction of that every month, especially in a current situation where, you know, when we're talking to customers and their mortgage payments are tripling or quadrupling, and they're struggling to know where to find that money first. Now, it's no consequence that if you look at where the green mortgages have been over the last 6 months, there's a lot of fanfare, perhaps even a year ago, a lot of fanfare. You know, we had lenders standing on stage telling us as brokers, put green mortgage pages on your website, come into the green mortgage concept. You're going to get lots of customers asking about it. We got to go out there and talk about green and about putting financial incentives within the mortgage industry together. When I look at, dare I say it, NatWest mortgage rates this morning, and they're 0.05 cheaper for a green mortgage over a traditional product, and there's no cash back or no incentives. Look, you know, I'm not saying NatWest are the only ones out there, but that's just typical of a high street lender. Look, a few of them have got some good ideas. Nationwide have got a 0% deal for upgrades that would positively affect your EPC, that type of thing. But if the mortgage lenders have gone from a huge fanfare about this 12 months ago to very quietly hiding this or tucking this away on their website and through us as brokers, you know, we don't even see them come up perhaps on our sourcing, it shows where the emphasis has moved away from. And I think that's right for the financial situation we're in. But what you can't have is a government, you know, very positively pushing a lot of cost to the common person, but there is no incentive. And in fact, as you said, you know, 34 years to make your money back on an investment, how many times would that property be sold realistically in 34 years? So why would I pay out £20,000, say, to improve a property I might sell in 3 years' time?
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll probably go and end up buying a property that needs the same again.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll probably have to go and spend it again and again and again.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think our economy and the way that perhaps we as consumers buy and sell our properties lends itself to an easy solution that perhaps in other parts of Europe, that stability and that property ownership model is much, much different.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, I think.
So the electric car example is a really good idea. Is a really good example. So for, you know, you look at, I've just gone to an electric car, and as soon as you go to electric car, everyone tells you it's not the fix and it's not a good idea and that sort of thing. So to me, it's a lot cheaper to run an electric car. I get tax incentives, the benefit in kind. They're no more expensive. If anything, it's cheaper than the car I had before. I have a charger on the front of my house. I charge it. It cost me about £10 to charge it, and I get 260 miles out of it. So I look at that, and I think that was an absolute financial decision for my family that saved us money. I haven't had to spend any extra money. I haven't had to have any disruption to my life. there we are. And that is why you're seeing a massive increase in electric cars, but also why you're seeing a big increase in people actually trying to invest in hydrogen to beat the electric cars and step it up again, because they can see that there's a market there, and that innovation and people spending money on electric cars is now creating businesses. If you create businesses through research and development and innovation, you are then employing people, those people are paying tax, then so you have an onward positive movement. So if we took that and applied it to regeneration of housing and green benefits and that sort of thing, there isn't anything that I could compare. You know, we're looking at 14 years, 20 years, 30 years to get your money back. Now, there is an argument that going back to the kitchen replacement, the kitchen replacement might not add any value to your house, but it makes living there a lot better. But again, if you're adding green incentives, the only incentive is financial, other than obviously the obvious of the environment and saving the planet and that sort of thing, which I shouldn't joke about. But, you know, to sharpen people's minds and to actually get people en masse doing this, there has to be an obvious financial benefit to it. And, you know, putting an extension on your house or redoing your garden, you will see a benefit to it. If you add square footage, you can calculate the increase in value. So until that point comes, I can't see there being any mass take up of any of these green improvements. I know there's some financial incentives in Scotland and Wales that we don't have in England. Mm-hmm. I don't know why that is. I've got the details of those loans that I can touch on, but again, if we're not even joined up as the United Kingdom or Great Britain, then, you know, and we're on this podcast and you know, we would have prepared and everybody's read a bit up and everyone's in their own kind of specialism, not one of us can put our fingers on actually a very positive, clear direction of financial incentive. So if we can't do it, the average person in their home is definitely not finding that on the internet. Mm-hmm. So that needs to change as well. There needs to be clarity, and there needs to be a big improvement in an obvious scheme. This is what you sign up for, and this is what happens. And the government can do it because they've just done it with ULEZ. ULEZ was a massive introduction, and it's got its detractors and it's got its supporters, but it's made a huge change to how people drive in central London. And there will be a benefit to clean air, whether it's right for, you know, people working who've suffered over the last 5 years. That's not for today, but it can be done. And with government backing and government support, any scheme will get traction. So it really does come back to central government to make sure that happens.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That's a really good point, because actually when I try and do some research for today, and you're putting in the various versions of kind of government greener grants or whatever you want to find on Google, so just take it from a kind of a normal person's perspective, I think out of the first 10 or 12 resources shown on there, many of them government-based websites, they were for the grant or the loan that actually expired last year. Yeah. So you can find old information easily. You know, it took you 2.5 pages to get to the point where it told you about the change in the grant for the heat pump to 7.5. I just wanted to check. There was no kind of caveat to that. Mm-hmm. And there is a little bit of caveat to it. There is a bit more information to it. It's not a flat 7.5. So finding the information is really, really difficult, mm-hmm. even when you're trying to research it. The concept of the car, the electric car, people are buying into that because the benefit is immediate. So when you're looking at a tank of petrol, probably £60, £70, perhaps £80 for what you put in as £10, people see the value immediately. You know, cars of circa £40,000-£50,000 is not uncommon these days. When these cars first came out a few years back, and I've had electric car for nearly 4 years, they were a premium. You paid extra to have that benefit, but the benefit was going to catch up. Now, if you look at a cost of a typical family car brand new, they're all broadly within the same range, but the lack of servicing requirements, the lack of moving parts, so you haven't got to hopefully worry too much about, you know, the equivalent of engines breaking down and servicing costs, and that immediate value of £40-£50 saving per week per tank means it's attractive from a financial perspective. It works. You don't have that as a parallel universe with the green ticket for a property, 34 years or, you know, 6 weeks perhaps on an electric car. But yeah, it's way, way too far away. You either incentivize by making it very, very affordable for everyone, or we have to look at a different model about where you price that within a house and how you then sell that on. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But you know, I think the car is a really good example of how it can work properly, but we just don't have that replicated in the property side of things.
Yeah. And Andreas has already alluded to earlier that the price of green technology, you know, could drop pretty fast. But just one more question, playing devil's advocate. Is there any risk that if you invest in solar, say solar technology now, or any big kind of technological investment, that it develops so quickly that the stuff that you've got on your roof becomes obsolete?
Mm. Good question. And I think the simple answer to that is probably yes. I mean, you've probably only got to look at the last 100 years and the advances in technology, not only in medical science, but landing on the moon and where we are at the moment. I think you're quite right. I think it needs to be cost-effective for clients. Clients need to see real benefits in any changes to their homes, especially if they're making any upgrades or greener initiatives. The government has to put some sort of bid in place and regulation, certainly for new builds, that it has to reach a certain, you know, kite mark or level so that their green initiative is stamp marked. And I think for existing homes as well, I think, you know, we've still got a lot of properties out there that we can't change to that extent. There's lots of listed buildings out there that you're very, you know, you're restricted to what you can physically do to these properties. You know, there needs to be some sort of level of mechanism in place, you know, whether it's some sort of additional funding. I think technology, as it grows, will probably take on board some of these older properties, but they're not going away. Mm. Newer build properties, if they become more efficient, will become the norm. I understand that. And aging properties, 100 plus years old, will become the sort of postcard dream house that only the select few will be able to own. But you've only got to look at the properties in and around the London area. If you look at that as a populace, then, you know, there's so many upgrades that can't be done on these properties. Mm-hmm. And it's a big black hole that the government are kicking the can down the road. It really is. And that needs some sort of clever thinking, really. And it needs some help, because at the moment, I think right from the start of this conversation, Justin alluded to, you know, the timing on this is just not, this, you know, it's probably with the cost of living crisis that everybody's experiencing in the UK. Having to bear these costs on top of that, people just won't do it. Mm-hmm. And that's the real issue at the moment.
Okay. Well, yeah.
I'm sorry, yeah. Just on that question. So going back to will people invest if they think it will be obsolete in the future? I think what needs to happen is that as soon as you allow innovation and as soon as you allow the private sector to grow that part of the industry, you will solve all of those problems. I don't think we'll solve them just with the government giving people money. I think it needs to be tax incentives to help businesses grow. You know, we can bring young people as they're coming through education, you know, they can see that as a viable career. And then from that point onwards, for example, solar panels, I would happily install solar panels because, like Andrea said earlier, you have a cable coming up from the batteries right up to the roof. You can change the solar panel at the roof level if they improve, and you can change the batteries. However, if you've just spent £10,000 on those panels and they improve 3 years later, which does happen, there's a very sharp curve when industries pick up on innovation and research and development, you know, you are going to be nervous of that. So it comes back to, can you lease, or is there a resale market, or is there a recycle market? Because additionally, the last thing we all want to be doing is throwing solar panels into a skip, mm-hmm. in 3 years' time, because we've saved the environment using them, but actually now they're obsolete. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there has to be a whole circular economy style investment to it. And that does come with incentivizing growth of the private sector in that particular part, mm-hmm. of the industry.
Yeah, that seems like a very good place to stop. I'm afraid we've run out of time, but it sounds like this place needs a lot of innovation. The government needs to get its act together. Let's hope this is going to happen sooner rather than later. Thank you very much for coming in and for joining us remotely. And thank you for listening.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Coriant. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
Did you know the Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin? Through the words and experiences of investment professionals, you'll discover who was their best mentor, what's a mistake they made that changed their approach, and how do they find their next great idea? Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Published by American Funds Distributors, Inc.